Okay, so we started discussing this yesterday. Last night I went through the entire piece with all the sources on Halatah. It really is a really it's an excellent piece. It's 35 pages long if you want to print it all out with all the makaros. See, 35. Look at that. So we said yesterday that one of the things that may hang on the question of where do the Jews live is the question of who is affected by the makot. I'm not going to make the mistake I did yesterday. If I see that we're reaching our limit, we'll do this over 2 days or whatever. And this is really a huge machlokas, right? How much were, if at all, were the Jews affected by the makot? And toch gedei, the mefarshim who weigh in on it provide rationales for what the purpose of the makot were, and therefore would it make sense for the Jews to be affected or not. So, growing up, I assume that you probably heard that the Jews were not affected at all. And this is the standard Midrashic approach. Rashi quotes it, but it's in Shemot Rabbah, it's in Bamidbar Rabbah, it's in the Tanchuma. I mean, all the Midrashic traditions basically go in this direction. Now, the evidence that you have to deal with in the Chumash is that there are specific makot where the Torah explicitly tells you the Jews are not affected. And then there are other makot where the Torah does not tell you that. So the Midrash just assumes that, okay, yes, it tells it to you by five, essentially, right? By Dever, and a little bit by Arov, and by Makot Bachorot, by Choshech in a certain sense. But from there we derive that it's true of all the makot. You probably, my guess is that when you were growing up, you heard, we're talking about the first approach and whether the Jews were affected by the makot. The first approach is the Midrashic one, which is they are not affected at all in all 10, despite the fact that the Torah only tells you in about 5 of them, to different extents, that the Jews are not affected. But this is the Midrashic one, and to be fair, it's really the early one, because Philo says the same thing. And Philo is talking even earlier than that. Philo of Alexandria,
yeah,
correct.
He's a Greek historian.
Yes. He's a Jew, right? He's a Jew with Hellenized, very Hellenized. But yes. And for example, the Midrash, to give you an example, the Torah never tells you that the Jews are not affected. In fact, you would think that they are affected because the Yarden is the Yarden. If it's all blood, and that's the main water source. What? What did I say?
Yarden.
Thank you. They're just thinking about the Yarden. The Nile, rather, not the Yarden. Yarden, yeah. The Nile. So you would think they would be affected. So what does the Midrash say?
The whole thing with the, every time they tried to take water, it was actually water.
Exactly, that if the Jews would take the water, it would turn into water. If the Egyptians would take it, it would turn into blood. And therefore, if the Jews wanted to make money, they would sell the water. Because if the Egyptians paid the Jews for the water, then it would stay water. And how did the Chartumim perform the same miracle? Wasn't all the water blood? They got water from Goshen, and the water in Goshen hadn't turned it, therefore they could try the miracle, right? So this is
They brought water to try and turn it to blood when all the water that they wanted was already blood.
Well, because they wanted to prove, and yeah, this is the Midrashic tradition. What is the logic of this, right? What is the logic of the Midrashic position? What's the logic of the Midrashic position?
Why would the Jews have been affected? God can do miracles. Why would he ever...
So first of all, it assumes that all of the makot are completely supernatural, and therefore there's no reason to limit the miraculous nature of them.
Right.
And many of the mefarshim who really go in this direction, the Rambam, the Meiri, right, the rationalist, have to go in this direction, they build it on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which says that 10 nisim were performed for the Jews in Mitzrayim. The way I understand that is basically every makkah that happened was performed for them. Right? It was so. Assumption one is they're all miraculous, right? Super miraculous. That there's no reason to assume. And second is that it's for them.
Right.
Right?
It seems like that's the miracle. Like the dumb part is
correct.
The miracle,
correct. So second is that it's for them. Right? Meaning the miracle is that you're protecting the Jews. You're doing this for the Jews. So why should they been affected? And the Radbaz goes farther and he says that the whole point is the message of the makot is to tell Paro, you have to let the Jews go. How would that message get across if the Jews are suffering along with the Egyptians? Philo takes it slightly differently and says that it's also meant to teach Mitzrayim that the Jews are deserving of being saved, not just that God is there for them. I'm going to read you Philo, right? Such then were the afflictions, not in the Greek, such then were the afflictions and punishments by which Egypt was corrected, not one of which ever touched the Hebrews, although they were dwelling in the same cities and villages and even houses as the Egyptians, and touching the same earth and water and air and fire, which are all component parts of nature, which is impossible to escape from. And this is the most extraordinary and almost incredible thing, that by the very same events happening in the same place, and at the same time, one people was destroyed and the other people was preserved. The river was changed into blood, but not to the Hebrews. For these, when these latter went to draw water from it, underwent another change and became drinkable, right? So this Midrashic tradition apparently is floating around. It's not just in Chazal. It's that whole, you know, this is a very early tradition.
Philo
is, what century is he?
He's second.
It's first or second, I think, right? Philo of Alexandria. I'll get you his exact date. Philo is 25 BC. Sorry, the first century before. Yeah. Yeah, so he's writing around the first century.
So he lived to see the Hurban?
No, I don't think so.
That
would be 85 years. I don't know if he did. And then he goes on. I mean, it. Right, and he says, and it seems to me that if anyone had been present to see all that happened at that time, he would not have conceived any other idea than the Hebrews were there as spectators of the miseries which the other nation was enduring, and not only that, but they were also there for the purpose of being taught that most beautiful and beneficial of all lessons, namely piety. For a distinction could otherwise have never been made so decidedly between the good and the bad, giving destruction to the one and salvation to the other. Right, so it's there to teach you Schar Va'onesh, to teach you that the Jews were good, that they deserved to be saved, right, all of that. And that would only happen if the Jews, right. Now the Midrash focuses more on the Midah Keneged Midah, right? That everything was Midah Keneged Midah. So the Jews didn't sin, so they're not going to get it, right? Meaning, so the assumptions here are that there's no reason to limit the miraculous nature of them. That the educational lesson here is that the Jews are good, the Egyptians are bad. That the Jews need to be saved, and the Egyptians need to be punished. How do you deal with the fact that the Torah only says it by five, so either you say, you just, you know, extrapolate, which is weird, because as we know, if it says it in one, maybe you extrapolate. If it says in two, maybe you extrapolate. If it says in five out of ten, right, then we normally don't extrapolate. But the Rambam tries to find hints in each one. And it, again, there are problems with this. Not only is it that it's mentioned by five, but that in three of them, Moshe actually tells Paro the Jews won't be affected, which makes it sound like in the other ones they will be affected. And you do have to explain that. And another thing you have to explain is that in a lot of the cases where the Torah explicitly distinguishes, it doesn't say for the Jews, it says that it's about Goshen. Right? So, for example, by Arov, it said v'hifleti and Eretz Goshen. Goshen will be different, which implies that it's the place rather than the people, and if going back to the question of where Jews living and etc., this gets complicated. But this is possibility one, is that Jews are not affected at all, Kihuza. Okay? A closely related one, I think we're going to have to do this over 2 days, so let's do possibility two. Possibility two is also that there's a sharp distinction, but admittedly it's not Jews and non-Jews, it's Goshen and not Goshen for the most part. That's possibility two. And this is the position taken by some of the Bali Tosfot and Moshe V'Skenim, taken by Shadal. And again, yesterday I actually checked all these sources. I read through all of them, so I'm not just taking Alatera's word for it, but they organize it really well, and I would suggest that you take the 45 minutes an hour. How long it takes you to read 35 pages, I don't know. 10 minutes, whatever.
Longer than 45 minutes to an hour.
10 minutes.
Okay, it took me more like 10-15 minutes, but whatever, but fine.
I was going to say, were you reading them, or were you like looking at the headlines?
No, I read through this. I printed, I put it in a PDF, and it was a 35-page PDF, and I went through it. It was great. It was wonderful. 15 maybe. I read through it. I read quickly. Anyways. What?
You learn how to do that in YU?
No, in high school, actually.
Okay.
In Rambam. I learned to speed read. Anyway, not important. Really not important.
Too, but I don't read that quickly when I'm trying
not to... Not important.
What exactly is...
Anyways, Moshe... So the Moshe of Skane and Bala chose to say as follows. And Shadal says this, and the Alatar is correct here, that Shadal admits, right? Every time he says this, he, like, apologizes for it. And he's like, Pshat tells me... He's like, I have to admit that the Pshat seems like it's mostly about Goshen versus Mitzrayim. And therefore, it is possible that Egyptians who were living in Goshen, again, going back to what we talked about yesterday, were, in fact, saved from these, and Jews who were living in other places... were not. This is... So there's a few reasons for this. One is, obviously, that even when you hear the distinction, often it talks about Goshen and not, that would point in that direction. Part of it is also that, you know, if you think there's in any sense a naturalistic element to these, so distinguishing based on geography makes more sense. It brings it a little bit more... in that that context, this helps you explain why, in certain cases, we distinguish, because, I'll get back to this. Now, they still have to explain why it's only true of certain makot that the Torah says it, because the Torah, right, according to them, it's true of all of the makot. By Dever, it's interesting. The Moshe Abiskanim says, why is it only by Dever that Paro checks? So he thinks because Dever is the only one where Moshe doesn't remove it. Right? There's no like removal, just things stop dying. So it's passive, and that's why he has to check. But really, it's true of all of them. Now,
check what?
Whether it affected the Jews. But basically, the second approach is to say, yeah, look, it's really about B'moshvotam. Right, it's really about where the Jews live. The only one that obviously everybody agrees is about ethnic identity, religious identity, and not geography is. You can't. Mag Bacharot, obviously. Mag Bacharot is the one where, and that, as we talked about, is the one where you really see that emphasis of Pasachti, right? Skipped over the houses of the Jews. It sounds very much like it's not geographic, and even if they're mixed, right? It's ethnic. So therefore, everybody agrees on that one. It is, but Shadal and the Moshe Tzigenim of the Vayitozva do go in the direction that it is primarily geographic. What we'll talk about, I guess, tomorrow is first some Mefarshim combine these and say it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And certain Mefarshim really say, no, it depended on the Makkah, and this is where it gets really interesting. The Keter Yitzchak, I think, is the most interesting, where he says it depends on the role of each Makkah. Different Makkot, it made sense to not distinguish, and different ones, it made sense to distinguish, because they were accomplishing different theological purposes, in which the goals were different, and therefore the means were different. So we'll come to that tomorrow, but so far we've seen the first two. One is that it always distinguished based on Jew versus non-Jew. The second is that it mostly was on geography, with certain exceptions. Bechorot, we can talk, maybe you think Dever is also like that, and that's what it means there, but fundamentally it's mostly geographic with certain exceptions. We'll talk about the other possibilities tomorrow. I guess that means tomorrow.